afternoon to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world on the Voice of Vashon. I'm sending you greetings today to all who traveled to New London, Connecticut, for the reunion of the Coast Guard cutter Glacier. And it turned out that there were people there who were from other ships. I, of course, was one of them, and from other icebreakers. But it was intended to be, in particular, to honor the Glacier. And I'm going to talk a little bit farther on down the broadcast about that particular gathering and a couple of things that happened. Your captain has managed to pick up a cold of some sort on this journey. I usually do not allow that to happen, and so why it happened beyond my permission is beyond my understanding at this point. But in any case, we're going to carry on, and we are carrying on. So special greetings to all who traveled to, in particular, New London and Mystic. New London, of course, is the home of the Coast Guard Academy and the home port of the Coast Guard cutter Eagle. But today, I am not in New London or Mystic. I am, in fact, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the Eastern time zone. It is one bell of the afternoon watch where you are. It is seven bells of the afternoon watch where I am. And before we get into some of the things that I'm going to cover in today's broadcast, the binnacle list is showing real progress. After last week's binnacle list report, in which I had to report the crossing of the bar of two people important to me in my life, no such repeats of that, and that all of Captain Joe's people who have had surgeries, who have had other procedures, other testing, everybody is on the mend, and that, of course, is the way that we like to see it. So why am I in Grand Rapids, Michigan? Grand Rapids, Michigan has no Coast Guard connections. It has. It is the home of Gerald Ford, and when you fly into the airport, you fly into the Gerald R. Ford Airport. And so the reason I'm here is that you all know and are now going to be reminded that I have a number of families of which I am a member. Some of these families I am connected by blood, some by marriage, some by other ways, and in this particular case, that is exactly the case, because the connection here is that I am here to participate in a citizenship ceremony for Janet. Now, Janet is married to Kevin, and Kevin is Ivy's son, and Ivy worked for me when I was the group commander in Sault Ste. Marie. And Janet has decided that she would become an American citizen. And she asked if there was some way that I could be a part of that celebration. And I was able to make it all fit together in conjunction with this trip for the Glacier reunion and also some other things that I'm going to be doing when I leave here. But I'm going to comment briefly myself on the subject of citizenship. And then I'm going to ask our honoree, who tomorrow is going to take the pledge and the promise that new citizens must take. I have served this country since I was 17. Many of you out there, the same is true. And we take for granted our citizenship in this great country. And when we have somebody or somebodies, plural, who want to become a citizen for one reason or another, then that is a very special occasion. So my question to you, Janet, you need to come over here because we've got this set up for on the speaker. My question to you is, what is your thinking about, first of all, got you thinking about doing this? And then secondly, having thought that you were going to do it, what were some of the obstacles that you had to overcome?
I love this country. I have no intentions of ever leaving, and it is time for me to step up and be able to vote and serve on a jury if needed and be a good American citizen. So,
a great answer, and one that if I had been scripting it, I would have scripted it just that way. But as you all know, this program is always unscripted and unrehearsed. And when I have a friend on, and you will recall that I never have guests, I only have friends that come on this broadcast with me. And when I have friends that come on with me, then I often don't know exactly what I'm going to get when I ask a question, and then I have the answer given to me. That was a lovely answer. And so, is it not true that you now do not need to give up your Canadian citizenship?
That is true.
So you are going to be a dual citizen with both Canadian and American citizenship.
That's correct.
And you're going to carry two passports.
Yes, they will.
And you're going to be using whichever one seems to get you through the quickest through TSA.
Yeah, depending on where you're going.
All right. So. All right. Okay. So it is a special privilege for me to be asked to be a part of this whole celebration, and it is a particular joy for me to be able to do it, to be able to put this together. There are 7 flight segments in this trip, and I have come up with some recommendations for United Airlines, which I am going to send them. In fact, I'm going to send them a letter between me, the captain, and the top person at United Airlines. I'm not going to mess around with some Joe the Ragman in the middle. Some of these things are things that they can do to have a better operation. And it is applying my military experience. So, Janet, how long ago did you decide that you wanted to take this particular route?
Well, I've been thinking about it for a long time, and then COVID hit and just kind of changed everything. So, but now the world opens back up, and it's just time. So
we all travel together. We all do a lot of things together as a family. Is it possible that we will go up into Canada when we do our summer trip this coming summer? What do you all think?
Yeah, I think anything is possible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we would use your Canadian passport. So the whole idea that the privileges of citizenship do not come easily to those who must apply for it. And what are some of the things that you had to do to get ready?
I had to study for the citizenship test, which had a lot of questions on history, and history wasn't my strong subject in Canada. It certainly wasn't here, and there were over 100 questions on the test. I had to drive from Traverse City to Detroit for an interview, and I said I would be acceptable as a citizen, and then I waited for the paperwork to come for my citizenship date for my ceremony, and the date that they picked was the same day that my husband was having his knee replaced. So we had to postpone.
Yes, that's right. I remember all of that.
Yeah. because
in fact, your husband, Kevin, was on the medical list over that.
Yes. So, and then it was sending a special letter off and asking to get things rescheduled, and which they did. And instead of having to drive to Lansing, now we're here in Grand Rapids. So tomorrow morning,
we all get together. We all four gather at some place here in Grand Rapids.
Yes.
And there will be a swearing-in ceremony,
yes,
I would assume.
And I believe there's a speaker, but they don't know all the details. I'll be surprised. We'll all be surprised.
So I am really looking forward to this, and I am so pleased and proud that you thought to include me in this particular celebration, because
I was thrilled when you told me you could come. I had tears in my eyes, and it's very hard to get a tear out of me. So,
So let us talk about a couple of other things that are on my regular schedule. And I will say that with the ceremony tomorrow, next week, I will be back in Vashon, and I will report on that, because those of us who are born in this country don't have to do anything. And in some cases, people don't do anything. They don't go into the military. They don't go into the Peace Corps. They don't do anything except hold out their hand. And so for people who want to become citizens and to go through the testing process is really, really important and very special. And I'm so pleased to be a part of it. To give you an update on my brother-in-law, Jack, a very interesting thing happened, and this is the first time that this has happened in my family. He had left instructions that he wanted to have a green burial, and I did not even know what a green burial was until all of this happened. So, Dr. Professor John J. McDonald was wrapped up in some kind of shroud, which will decompose along with Dr. Professor John J. McDonald. And in a section of the cemetery in Essex Junction, probably in a Catholic cemetery in consecrated ground, a hole was dug, and Jack was I'm not going to say unceremoniously, but was put in this hole. And no coffin, no casket, no liner, no nothing. Just Jack wrapped up in, I don't know, Subway wrappers. Whatever it was that they wrap him up in, he was then put into the ground. And then a few days later, there was a Catholic Mass, because he was of the RC persuasion, and my sister Lib is devout, practicing Roman Catholic, more so, I think, than Jack. And the evidence for me of that is his wishes and desires to have this green burial. So all of the of their children were able to be there, and most of their grandchildren. And I was not able to be there because I had commitments that I had committed to a long time ago. And but I was given a full report on all of this by my sister Lib. And she said that that is exactly what they do. They just dig a hole and put Jack in the hole with wrapped up in banana leaves or whatever it is. I have to think a little bit on this, and I have to think a little bit on it because my own mortality is creeping up on me. It is my wish so far that at the time that I cross the bar, that it will be with a military funeral for a senior officer, with all of the ceremony that goes with that. It will be my last gift to the magical Isle of Vashon. And I was talking to somebody at the Glacier reunion, and I said, what is more and more appealing to me is one of those New Orleans street funeral bands. And he said, well, put it in your will, and somebody will come from New Orleans and play Just a Closer Walk with Thee. And then as you process to the cemetery, and right now my plan and my written instructions are that I be put in the ground next to Mary R. But and that the flag be folded and presented to my family. So I'm thinking about this because there is a great deal of goodness and a lot of unselfishness about the way that this was done. And I will be thinking about that, whether or not this is something that I want to do for myself. I am not making any announcements here, by the way. Be not deceived. There is nothing that I'm saying to you which is telling you that that ceremony is imminent. I'm just telling you that I am thinking through about it. The reunion of Glacier, the Coast Guard cutter Glacier. Glacier was an expanded wind class, an expansion of my north wind. And when she was decommissioned, she was still in commission when I was the ice boss for Admiral Venske and that wonderful gentleman of our service, Jim Gracie, Commandant Jim Gracie. And was thinking that the reunion of Glacier originally belonged to the Navy. She was one of the ships that came to us when the Navy turned all the icebreakers and the icebreaking mission over to the Coast Guard. And she had I think we could be honestly and say that she had a spotty history. I knew just about all of her commanding officers for the last few years of her life. I vetted all of them for the period from 1983 to 1986 when I became an honored retiree. And so, but there's another interesting connection. One of her commanding officers was a gentleman by the name of Gene McCrory. And when I graduated from the academy and I went to my first ship before I had my first command, Gene McCrory was my first XO. From him, I learned a great deal. He was an absolute genius at single screw ship handling, for example. He was just absolutely instinctive about it. And everything I learned about single screw ship handling, I learned from Gene McCrory. And so in later years, he became captain in Glacier. And he had a ship's doctor, and that ship's doctor was named Dr. Bob Bunas. And Dr. Bob Bunas wrote a book about his time in Glacier for a deployment under the command of Gene McCrory. This book is not particularly laudatory of Captain McCrory. And in fact, it is so unlaudatory that when Dr. Bunas sent it to me and asked me for a comment to go on the jacket, I said, I wish that you had let me read this before you went to print because you've got some factual errors. And I would certainly have wanted to say something in defense of Captain McCrory. That didn't happen. The book is available for purchase. It's called Wind, Fire, and Ice. I own a copy, which has been signed to me by Dr. Bunas. And I remain today ready to give him some help should he decide that he wants to do a second edition. In the meantime, New London is an old, old city, as cities go in this country. And it doesn't look too much different from the way it was when I was a cadet. 70 years. Isn't that a kick in the butt? So I urge all Coast Guard people who are looking for a place to go back to one of their roots that they go to New London and that they go to the academy, because that is where most of our officers are trained. It has fallen on evil times, and I've talked about that, and I'll talk about it some more later. But it is fundamentally sound and is fundamentally doing the right thing. So that's the first place that I urge Coast Guard people to go, and the second place, of course, is Cape May. Those of you who did boot camp in Cape May, and that's just about everybody who came into the service after the Alameda times, all of you have no doubt fond memories of working on the grinder at Cape May, especially if you were there in the summertime. But go back now as a honored retiree or as a veteran and enjoy the town, because what has happened in Cape May is that the people who run the city have restored much of the Victorian charm of it. And it really is a lovely place to go. When I was captain in Agassiz, in Cape May, one of my drinking places was Buoy One. Buoy One is still there. It is still just as gritty as it always was. And if you are of an age where you are old enough to consume alcoholic beverages, if you go into Buoy One, you will see that the heads have not been cleaned since 50 years ago. They're almost exactly the same as they were then. I took Mary R. there one time. I took her to Cape May to show her the Victorian town as it had been restored. And I said, now I'm going to take you to one of my drinking places, Buoy One. And we walked in. And she said, I don't like this place. I want to do she didn't say I want to do a 180, but she said, I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to leave now. Joseph, I'm ready to leave now. So we left now. But not before I had a chance to do a captainly inspection to make sure that it was just as rotten and gritty as it has always been. And for that, I urge you all to go back to Cape May and go back as a more mature sailor with your ladies. Back for a minute to the Glacier Reunion, one of the things that happened was that a gentleman who is part of a society called the Glacier Society has bought an Arctic Survey boat. And I had an Arctic Survey boat in my Northwind, and I used it a lot. They're very heavy. They were very difficult to launch and recover. But he has restored this, and he gave rides to people during the reunion, and for that we are very, very grateful and appreciative. So it was a wonderful gathering, and the decision was taken that we would all get together someplace in the Great Lakes in 2 years. And, of course, the Great Lakes is one of my hometowns, so I have volunteered not to be on the planning board. I said I don't have many dances left in my dance card for that, but I will be happy to be a consultant for people who might want to talk about where to have it and which town to have it and what the facilities are. So 2 years from now, Glacier Reunion, probably someplace in the Great Lakes. In the meantime, in 2025, my Ingham reunion will be this year in Key West. And I will, of course, be going to that because I am her senior living captain. And that will be in the summertime, probably. There'll be a lot more information about that when all of this comes along. The one of the things that happened on one of these flights was that, I don't know if you all have noticed this, but every now and then the flight attendants will block the access to the forward head. And they do that so that the captain can take a head call. XO or first officer, whatever they call them in the airline business. To me, he's XO. XO then takes his turn, and then they go back onto the flight deck and they move the block. On one of the segments, I was sitting in the front end. I now fly only in the front end of the airplane so that I have easy access to the head. And not only did they block it, but then the captain came out. A parenthetical insertion here, which doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but the captain was a lady. And she came up, and she used the head, and then I thought, well, then she's going to go back on the flight deck. We all can have access to the head again. Not so. She decided to call a conference in the area where the galley is, and all of the flight attendants were gathered around inside the blockade. They do it with a trolley. And so all of the flight attendants and the captain. Well, I'm beginning to squirm just a little bit. I'm getting just a little bit urgent down in the build section of your captain. And they're having this big discussion. Now, it's not any of my business what that discussion was all about. Was the captain getting advice on how best to shoot an approach into the next place that we were going to land? I don't know the answer to that. What I do know, though, is that for probably 20 minutes, half an hour, the trolley blocked access to the forward head while the captain, and no question but it was the captain, four stripes on the shoulders. I can count just as well as anybody else. And I always know that captains have four stripes in the airline business. So, so for half an hour, she convened this conference with the flight attendants. And the flight attendants didn't seem to think that there was anything untoward about all of this. What the heck? Captain says that's what we're going to do, then that's what we're going to do. At least we have that left in the whole business of authoritarianism left in this world. So this letter that I'm going to write to the head of United Airlines is going to include a discussion of that particular phenomenon. And I'm going to tell you now a story about a letter that I wrote to the captain of the Norwegian Pearl. Mary and I took an Alaska cruise some years ago, and the place that we went in was Sawyer Arm. The captain in Norwegian Pearl was a Swede, and he kept going closer and closer to the toe of the glacier. And I kept sending him these subliminal signals. Turn around, Captain, you're getting too close, and you are going to pay for it. So eventually he got up pretty close. He fulfilled the desires of all of his passengers to get close to this particular glacier, turned around, and went back out. The last day was a theater day, and Mary and I were sitting in the theater, and we were right over the starboard propeller. And I heard this thump, thump, thump. And I said to Mary R., I said, I know what he's done. He has picked up a Berge bit in that starboard propeller, and he has bent or maybe even sheared a blade. So I wrote him a letter, captain to captain. Now, you would think that a letter captain to captain, in which I told him who I was and what my background was, what my experience was, and I said, Captain, when you get this ship home, in the dry dock in Los Angeles, which is where she's headed, you're going to find that you have lost at least one blade. My big mistake was that I dropped it into the box where comments from the public can be put. What I did not know was that that box had no bottom. It went right into the recycle, and I never heard anything from that captain. So here we are with your captain with a really crappy cold, and the time has come for us to say goodbye. Tomorrow morning, my dear friend Janet, along with all of the rest of my family here, We will foregather for that ceremony, and then we will have our own celebration. It's just going to be a wonderful time. So this is your Captain Joe. I never say goodbye. I say until we meet again. And as always, I am on station and watching properly.